It's no surprise that updating the electricity grid today will make for a better tomorrow. Increased self-sufficiency is just one of the benefits. The Great Grid Upgrade will also boost the economy and create new green jobs. And best of all, you can continue doing the things you love, like watching the latest epic nature documentary or listening to this podcast while caring for the planet too. Find out more at nationalgrid.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
You're listening to The Plodcast, a weekly adventure in the British countryside from BBC Countryfile magazine. I'm Fergus Collins, and I'm your host. Now, I take pretty much for granted having access to nature in the countryside, and I feel welcomed and comfortable roaming the hills and woods at my leisure, really. But not everybody has the same experience, and there are many groups and individuals who feel excluded because of their social class, their race, gender, or even sexuality. So this week, we're off to find out a bit more. We're heading to Epping Forest on the eastern edge of London on a night walk organised by the William Morris Gallery and, as you'll hear, a number of other organisations who work hard to help those who struggle to access nature in the countryside to give them a bit of help connecting with the outdoors. And we'll also hear from lots of those excluded individuals and groups about the barriers they face. Our guide tonight is folk singer and sound engineer Alice Boyd, who I'm delighted to invite to the podcast for the very first time. She's absolutely brilliant. And you can find out more about Alice's music at her website, www.aliceboyd.info. And of course, you can contact me and the podcast team on editor@countryfile.com.
So I'm currently somewhere very exciting. I am near a road in a field in Chingford, which is a town in East London near Epping Forest. So it's just on the outskirts of Epping Forest. And you may be able to hear in the distance a group of people. I am about to go on a night walk as part of the William Morris Gallery's programme around their Radical Landscapes exhibition. And so the plan is to go into the forest as night falls. Hopefully we'll hear some lovely nocturnal nature sounds, or at the very least, some interesting conversations with people along the way. I'll be talking to some of the organisers as well as some of the participants of the walk, so stay tuned for that. All right, here we go.
I'm Mike Smith, I'm a member of the Epping Forest Heritage Trust, and we're helping escort the people today.
What do you hope to experience on the night
walk? I enjoy the forest always. Introducing other people to it in the night, always interesting in the night. We'll be coming back, hopefully it'll be pitch dark, which will be fun. Maybe see some, maybe see a fox or we'll see lots of other people.
I'm Nat.
I'm Julia.
What does doing a night walk mean to you?
Maybe just like peace and being like your senses are a bit disrupted, so engaging with nature in a different context than probably than I usually do.
Yeah. And that's it. I feel like I've not necessarily done a lot of night walking over here, more the countryside, so I'm excited to like just a bit peaceful, a bit away from the cars, because it'd be not really good. And with such a large group, I think it'll be really interesting too.
Yeah.
It's a cloudy afternoon and the forecast said it was going to rain. I've got my waterproofs at the ready and it is a bit windy. The evening is starting to draw in, so it's starting to get darker. There are people in their high-vis jackets and it looks like we might be ready to go.
Hello, just it's fantastic to see so many people here this evening. How many of you have been to Epping Forest before? Okay, and how many, this is the first time in the forest? So a few, okay, so welcome. So this is a truly ancient forest. We've got 55,000 ancient trees in the forest. And the reason that some of the trees are so old, some of them are over 1,000 years old, is that people have been engaging with them in a very symbiotic relationship for hundreds and hundreds of years. Lopping them is the technical term. Very carefully every 12 or 15 years, and that adds to their longevity, how old they live, and it adds to their biodiversity, and they're very, very precious, not just here and across the UK, but also worldwide. So some of them over 1,000 years old further north in the forest, and you'll see some of the weird shapes they create as we walk later on today. And the other thing to say is it's also, this place is the start of the conservation movement in the UK, really. As London was expanding in the 1860s and 1870s, old big manor landlords were trying to enclose this precious land that had been common land. And the people of East London basically rose up and started ripping down the fences. They're saying, we've got a right to this land as well. And dignitaries, famous people like Octavia Hill, who went on to found the National Trust, also got involved, and parliamentarians got involved. And in the end, in 1878, this forest was protected by the Act of Parliament that's meant that this place is free for people to access, for anyone who wants to come here. And then that led to the creation of the national parks over the forthcoming years. We're Epping Forest Heritage Trust. We're going to help you on the walk today in partnership with our fantastic friends from the Hive and from the William Morris Gallery. Do have a fantastic walk. If you've got questions about the forest, ask any people in the high vis. And I'm going to hand over to Emma to lead off.
Right, let's get started. Okay, we're going
to head this way. Okay. So, could you tell me your name and your role in the event tonight?
So my name's Christine Lai and I'm the Public Programme Curator at the William Morris Gallery. And I'm sort of responsible in co-producing and running this event between Epping Forest and the Hive.
Great, and can you tell me a bit more about the event and what we're doing?
Yeah. So this event kind of really comes around in response to the William Morris Gallery's exhibition, Radical Landscapes, which is really looking at the past 150 years of British land art in a really expansive way and how art was used in a kind of activist format as well as spiritual and aesthetic. And this, whilst we were programming for the events and activities in response to this exhibition, it was really at the peak of the Right to Roam conversations as well. And we knew, being as part of the local council as well at the William Morris Gallery, we really wanted to look at access to nature, particularly because within Waltham Forest, wherever you are, 15 minutes away is Epping Forest or Walthamstow Marshes or the wetlands.
Why a night walk specifically?
Yeah. So I think really for us as well, like I'm a second generation British born Chinese person who never really felt safe to walk in the forest. But also on top of that, it's like being a woman as well. And all these kind of, in 2021, we had all those kind of horrible femicides. So this, it was kind of like a way to tie in all those conversations, as well as the history of Epping Forest, as well as a site of activism, to bring everyone together in a joyous kind of celebration to walk through the forest and actually make it less scary and feel the benefits that most other people might when you're walking through a forest. Yeah.
I love that, and I think specifically like the walking through a forest at night, and it can be a really scary thing to do, particularly if you're used to living in a city where you've got street lamps.
Exactly, and I think what's really funny is that our colleagues in the Hive are so comfortable walking through by themselves, and like we were doing site visits as well, and we were walking doing this route right now, and they were like, yeah, so we do this all the time, like walking by myself with our dog, like walking through the forest, and I was just like, what? How? Like, do you not get scared? Like, is no one going to jump you? Like, where's the closest person if you're walking by yourself? And I think those are really the key kind of drivers for this event. So it's really kind of like making that expansive. And also by commissioning Misery, it's also bringing kind of queer, trans people of colour who are often overlooked and marginalised in these kind of conversations, and also most vulnerable as well. And to say that we're here in solidarity with you guys, and we hope that together we can bring a kind of like more joyous feel to walking through the forest in the middle of the night.
Yeah, can you briefly explain? I'm talking to someone from Misery later, what Misery is.
So Misery is a sober, that started off as a sober club night, but they've also since 2022 been doing nature walks and kind of herbal medicine events. And what's really great about them is that they're also local. So that was really a key thing when I'm programming for the Radical Landscapes program, is to really also invest in local artists and local community organizations who are already here doing that work.
What are some of the ways you feel like we can increase access to nature?
I think art is a very important way. I mean, William Morris has a lot of writings, and he was so inspired by his local naturescapes like the River Lea and Epping Forest as well.
Because he was actually born in Walthamstow.
Yeah, he's born in Walthamstow, and he's also, he had a house here in Epping Forest. So he's, yeah, it's really permeates throughout his work. But for us as a gallery, it's really important to kind of make those, what he was writing about and why he was writing about. So his kind of a creative life for all, his environmentalism and also his socialism, really relevant to today.
Please, could you tell me your name?
My name is Nazir. I'm from Bangladesh, and I really like meeting queer people. And Misery, they do event for QPOC people. So it's a good way to meet queer people of color. Whenever I come here, I make some good friends whom I can connect easily. And also, it gave me good relaxation when I walk through the forest, because most of their working group from big forest helps me to calm down and connect with nature. And I always enjoy coming to Misery events. And yeah, everyone is so friendly here.
Could you tell me, what does going on a night walk mean to you?
I've been to some of the like morning walk, but I never been to night walk, so I'm very excited for that. It will be good fun and an adventure to walk in a forest at the night time. I'm looking forward to it.
Robin having a little sing in one of the trees.
So I'm Peter Lewis.
And what is your role on the walk today?
So I'm the back marker on the walk, and I work for Epping Forest Heritage Trust.
Amazing. Can you tell me a bit about where we are right now and what we're looking at?
Yes, we're just off to the side of Kingford Plain in Bury Wood. And we're surrounded by ancient trees, mostly hornbeam and oak down here. And further north in the forest, you get up to the ridge where there are more beech trees, ancient beech. Yeah, so Epping Forest Heritage Trust is a membership organisation and charity that cares for Epping Forest. So we do walks and talks about the forest, we run hands-on conservation projects in the forest, and we advocate on behalf of the forest, because the forest doesn't have a voice, so it needs the charity to stand up for it.
What are some of the challenges that the forest is currently facing?
So the biggest challenges at the moment are climate change and pollution. And the biggest thing in relation to pollution is where there are 68,000 homes planned within a 6.2-kilometre zone of influence of the forest over the next 15 years. So lots more housing means lots more cars and lots more people and lots more pollution.
And what are some of the ways that the Trust is working to, I suppose, adapt to these challenges, or what are some of the steps that you're taking?
So one of the most important things is to bring more people into the forest, because if people don't come and visit the forest, they don't come to care for it and they don't stand up for it. So events like this are brilliant to bring more and different people into the forest. And then we're doing conservation projects, so we take people into the forest, volunteers into the forest, and they clear areas around the ancient trees so that the ancient trees can live for longer. And the ancient trees are fantastic. 55,000 ancient trees in Epping Forest, incredibly biodiverse, so protecting them as much as we can. And then things like on the planning side, responding to planning applications to make sure that the new development doesn't do any harm to the forest.
With the ancient trees, how do they support their surrounding ecosystem?
So you made me all get emotional then talking about the trees. I mean, some of the trees here are over 1,000 years old. They've been here almost forever. I mean, and they connect to each other, as we know now, through all the fungal mycorrhizal networks. They engage and support with each other. But the thing that really touches me is that they are only here in the way that they are here because people have engaged with them in a really, truly sustainable way for hundreds and hundreds of years. Not cutting them down, but lopping them very carefully, so that the trees survive, the people could take the wood that they needed for their fires or for their fences. But the trees are still here today that were watching Henry VIII walk in Epping Forest in the 16th century. So that's just a wonderful thing to remember about how we, when we treat trees carefully and with love, that they will be here for generations to come.
For people who don't know, what is the process of lopping?
So, lopping can take various forms, because lopping just means cutting trees. But the biggest practice in Epping Forest is pollarding. And pollarding means cutting the tree almost directly straight across above head height. So it's like coppicing, which is at ground level when you get lots of new growth at ground level. But pollarding you do above head height to protect it from being grazed by the cattle or by the deer. And that would happen on a cycle every 12 or 15 years. And the people were allowed to cut a piece of wood up to the width of their forearm, which they would then use for fences or for firewood. And that actually helps the trees regenerate, it strengthens their root systems. And if it's done on a regular basis, they are like some of the trees we're walking past now, who are taken down just above head height, and they get new growth every time that they're cut. So they come out in these weird and wonderful shapes.
Where we see those bubbles there, is that where they've been lopped?
Yes, exactly. I think there was a technical term for that I'm just...
You mean to say the technical term isn't bubbles?
The technical term isn't bubbles. Now you've just made me totally forget what the term is. But yes, exactly that. That's where branches have been taken off.
Okay.
So these are just wonderful hornbeams that have been locked and locked and locked, and they're coming up with these fantastic new young branches. They look a bit like a Medusa with snakes coming out of their hair on the top. They just make me smile. And they'll be, those hornbeam will be 300 years old probably at least.
Okay, so we're just coming off the forest path and are heading into the hive. And the Hive is an environmental education centre in the heart of Epping Forest. And in here there are going to be lots of events this evening, a fire pit, warm souffle and bread, various forest crafts and things like that. So looks like there's loads of exciting stuff happening. I'm going to be interviewing one or two more people while I'm here, and then I'll be heading back to Chingford Station via the woods.
Oh, there's a deer over there, muntjac.
A muntjac? Well, can you tell me a bit about what a muntjac is?
Yeah, so a muntjac, they're actually an invasive species. They don't belong in England, in the United Kingdom. They've come over here from Asia. A long history, but the two main species of deer that we find in our woods in Epping Forest here are the muntjac and the fallow deer. So we usually have a lot of them visiting our site because we are literally smack bang in the middle of the forest. So over there we just saw one of the, I think it was a male muntjac deer, probably scuttering around trying to find a mate.
Yep. So could you tell me your name and what your role is?
Yes, my name is Abby Young. I'm an environmental education officer here at the Hive. So I am responsible for teaching children that come on school trips, teaching them all about nature, the environment, climate change, and also responsible for teaching adult groups carbon literacy as well. So teaching them about how to manage their carbon emissions and just basically everything about doing better for the environment.
Can you tell me a bit about what's happening tonight and where we are right now?
Yes, so right now we are in the middle of Epping Forest, part of High Beach area. We have been running our night walk event tonight, which has been a really exciting collaboration between us here at the Hive, William Morris Gallery and Misery Mental Health Collective. The whole kind of idea behind it is that we're basically bringing the outdoors to a more inclusive space. So we've got marginalised communities, people that usually struggle to access these spaces, or might feel that it's slightly unsafe for them, and we're just bringing that community into the forest, getting people out in nature in a safe, controlled environment where people can like meet new people, learn more things about nature, and just generally have fun.
What are some of the things you think we can do to increase access to nature for people who maybe don't feel as comfortable in it?
I think that's really important. So especially a big part of my role, I work with kids that are very inner city London, they've not got much access to nature. So a big part of what we do and what other people can work with as well is just getting with a group, especially if you don't feel safe by yourself. And it's all about breaking down that stigma that the outdoors belongs to a certain type of person from a certain background, because nature is diverse, humans are diverse, and I think it's just bringing that all together, bringing that back. Everyone belongs in nature.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you find particularly exciting about nature?
Oh man, I could talk for days about what I love about nature. I am obsessed with just how seasonal, how exciting nature can be, from the smallest, tiniest fungi to the large deer that we find roaming the forest. There's just so much out there to find if you just kind of take the time and spend time seeing what you can spot. Things that are healing, things that just spending time in nature makes me feel much happier. Looking for bugs under logs, that's one of my favorite things to do with kids. Picking up worms, touching slugs, it's great. Just proper bare hands in the dirt, I love it.
And what are you hoping people will get out of this evening?
I'm hoping that people, first and foremost, are going to have fun. They're going to get closer to nature, learn something new, maybe learn that they have a love for nature or deepen their already existing love for nature. And I think it's that healing properties of being in a group of people who you can relate to, who have gone through similar struggles, who want to just find people that can be happy, share good vibes with, and have a really nice experience.
So, could you tell me your name and your role in this event tonight?
Yeah, hi, my name's Aisha, and I'm one of the organisers of Misery. Misery's a mental health collective for queer and trans people of colour, and we've been doing events and offering services and experiences since 2018, and this is our latest event with The Hive and William Morris Gallery.
Could you tell me a bit about where we are right now and what we can see around us?
So we're on the land of the Hive, which used to be the Sun Trap, and there's lots of grass everywhere, and there's some trees around, and in the distance I can see a bonfire from the bonfire making session that's happening across the way.
Can you tell me a bit about, so now we're here at the Hive, what activities are going on and what are people getting involved in?
Yeah, there's quite a bit going on. There's sort of like a main cozy area, which the last time I checked, honestly, just had a lot of kids jumping on the cushions that we had lovingly placed around the place, which is pretty fun. There's some hot food there, which was also very high in demand after a long, muddy walk through the forest. And we also have a grief installation, because at all of our events, we try to carve out a space for grief to be present with everybody, and something that can be held together as a community. We've got some arts and crafts happening, and then in another building we have three workshops being run by the amazing Misery facilitators. We have one that's a necklace making or jewelry making workshop using natural materials such as dogwood and other things that our facilitators have been like foraging and prepping for the last couple of months. We also have a collaging workshop that's kind of looking into queerness in the natural world, and all of the ways that the binary is disrupted all the time in the natural world around us. And also we have a workshop on why seeds are very important, and people are making their own seed packets to take home.
So why a night walk? Why did you decide to like manifest this event in this way?
Well, for the last couple of years, Misery has run a monthly event called Misery Medicine, where we gather somewhere outside in a natural space, in a green space, and learn about the plants that are growing around and make medicine together. That was pretty important because I think we are, you know, living in a time where a lot of people need a lot of help, especially mental health support. And so we wanted to sort of take this opportunity to decolonize experiences of being outside and also rethink what medicine is, and that's kind of what Misery is about. So an opportunity to like have marginalized people feel held outside and feel some sort of ownership of outdoor spaces is always something we're interested in. Being given the opportunity to reconnect and do that even in cities, even in spaces that aren't necessarily considered, you know, areas of like great nature, that it's everywhere. Weeds are nature, weeds are herbs, and people can just sort of start small and befriend whatever is growing around them.
Is there anything coming up for Misery or anything you'd like to share that people could get involved with?
Misery has a monthly event. It's on the first Saturday of every month. And right now it's happening at Bethnal Green Nature Reserve. And yeah, it's for Black people and people of colour only. And it's a great event. Join our mailing list to get tickets for that. The monthly event is Misery Medicine, run by community herbalists, and we sort of just learn about what's in season at the time, herbs, plants, flowers that are growing naturally around us, and what their medicinal properties are, and yeah, just befriend them and make medicine with them sometimes as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first, I'd like to say a huge thank you to Alice for trekking into the dark forest and recording all those fascinating voices. Anything that encourages a more diverse group of people to enjoy the countryside only broadens and deepens the love for our beleaguered natural world, which frankly needs as many supporters and advocates as possible at the moment, as I'm sure we would all agree. You can find all the details of the various organisations involved in the programme notes, and if you'd like to comment on anything that you've heard in this week's episode, you can contact me in the podcast team on our email address, which is editor@countryfile.com. And of course, don't forget to leave likes, feedback and other nice things on whichever podcast provider you use. It's a massive help. And you can find us on BBC Countryfile Magazine's Instagram, Facebook and other social media pages. This episode of the podcast was produced in Bristol by Jack Bateman and Lewis Dobbs. Thanks so much for coming with us on this night walk, and join us again next week for another adventure in the British countryside. But for now, it's goodbye.